In South Africa's news flow, we've witnessed that whistleblowing does come with a significant risk to one's life. If you think about Babita, again, one of the speakers who had actively participated in raising the red flag about fraud and corruption that took place within the Tembisa Hospital, that again cost her life. And for many South Africans who have been vocal about corruption, financial malfeasance and misconduct, some of them unfortunately don't end up either surviving or with the necessary protection and recourse to make sure that their interests are also protected just by doing the right thing and following through with ethics. This sets the tone and context for our conversation, essentially asking, how do we strike a balance between ethics and safety?
Legally speaking on Kaya Biz.
To help us out with this conversation, we join on the line by Tendai Changara, a director in dispute resolution practice at Cliff Dekker Hofmeyr, also known as CDH. Good to have you with us on the show, Tendai.
Thank you very much for having me, Gugulethu.
Fantastic. This one is quite an intriguing conversation because it's so layered and has so many far-reaching implications. But let's just take a look at where we are in terms of South Africa and protection and I guess the rate of whistleblowing and whistleblowing activity.
So, you know, Gugulethu, we find ourselves, 25 years into our democracy, in a country where we understand corporate governance, we understand ethics, but unfortunately, we still find that, one, we have a need for whistleblowing, which is acceptable, but we see that our whistleblowers are suffering. We have our legislation, and our main piece of legislation is our Protected Disclosures Act, which seeks to protect those who make disclosures. Unfortunately, this is limited to the employment relationship only. But as we know, a lot of our whistleblowers are forced to go outside the employment relationship for obvious reasons. You know, very often what they uncover, the malfeasance that you spoke about, is within their work environments. So as much as we have our legislation, it's proved to not be enough when it comes to protecting our whistleblowers. So you spoke about Ms. Dia Karan, who unfortunately lost her life. She's not the only one. We also find that we've had whistleblowers who've lost their jobs, who've had to leave the country. And this has been over the 25 years. Mm-hmm. The situation is not getting better. We're in desperate need of, one, revised legislation, but also just an ethical cultural change, I think, more than the legislation itself. Mm-hmm. We need to start thinking about our values as a society, how our organizations are run, and how we really at people who want to come and do the right thing, who step up at great cost to do the right thing, and how we protect them.
Mm. Maybe let's delve into that. At first, you're taking a look at the cultural dynamics as well as the context as to why it's important for people to blow the whistle on corruption and understanding the psychology of why they essentially don't.
So, you know, our starting point is that, you know, unfortunately, we have issues of fraud and corruption that are occurring in our organizations. And this is private and public sector. Mm. So it's limited to one area within our society. And, you know, the reason, you know, our culture is not coming right is unfortunately we have persons, you know, who are our own people in society who feel that they must benefit within their organizations. So we've got a culture of some persons who feel that they unduly need to benefit. And then we have those who want to. And, you know, you spoke about the psychology of blowing the whistle. You know, it takes a deep level of ethics to stand up and speak. So we still have people, even in the face of great danger, who want to do the right thing, who understand that corruption doesn't just affect an organization. It takes away from, societal needs, us meeting the requirements, making sure that our hospitals are stocked, for example, our schools are built. So we have persons who really want to stand firm on that. But unfortunately, our culture is just not allowing it at the moment.
Very true. And that does seem as though we need some level of correction. And I guess coming towards that, we typically do see that within professional circles and professional industry bodies and regulators, whether one is an attorney or in the legal fraternity, financial services, engineering, there's always this underscoring theme of governance and governance being prioritized within professional circles. Are we finding that those initiatives, those endeavors, those professional alignments are translating into the workplace, or is it not entrenched enough at all levels of management?
So, you know, I think the danger we find is that the message is strong, and I think the message is coming across very clearly. So from a national level, within our public sector, you know, when we speak about public servants, that message is strong. In the private sector as well, we see that our policies are strong. So on that level, our message is correct. Unfortunately, it's not playing out. So the corporate governance structures are there, the frameworks are there, but they depend on people. And that's where our challenge is. They depend on people hearing the message and actually following through on what it says. And, you know, just an unfortunate situation is that we still have persons who want to enrich themselves. Mm. On a very high level, we went through state capture, we saw how pervasive that was, how strong that was. So we're at a level where, you know, the legislation speaks strongly, the policies speak strongly, people speak strongly by standing up as whistleblowers. But again, we have that challenge. But I would like to believe, Gugulethu, that we are turning the corner. I think going through the state capture commission and really, you know, just aerating what we went through as a nation with that has put us on a good footing. But now our challenge is seeing whether we'll see action. Are we going to see the criminal cases follow that? And at this moment, we're not seeing that. But we're hoping that our institutions are strong enough for us to actually see the action that follows those whistleblowing activities that our very brave people go through.
Very true. Let's talk about legislation for a moment. You did mention, Tendai, that we do need to see a few interventions and changes taking place here. Where do we stand in terms of the current regulatory environment regarding this legislation to protect whistleblowers, but also to ensure that there's adequate accountability, right, and prosecution of those who are found guilty of negating their governance and good corporate governance responsibility?
Absolutely. So we find that we have a framework which has a number of legislative precepts as part of it. Our main one being obviously the Constitution, which protects us as people, and then our Protected Disclosures Act, which I mentioned earlier. We see whistleblowing spoken about through a number of other pieces of legislation. But really what we found is that these pieces of legislation speak to our employment setting. We find that this legislation hasn't pulled together in a manner that we see it being. You mentioned the protection of whistleblowers. We have a Witness Protection Act, but we have not seen it working in tandem with our Protected Disclosures Act. So with credit to our Justice Department, we have now started a process of reforming our legislation when it comes to whistleblowers and really looking at the protection of our whistleblowers. So we're in the process now of going through just a review, a reform process of the legislation. Shortcomings in our legislation have been identified, the main ones really being lack of protection for our whistleblowers and then just the detriment that they suffer. And we're now looking at not just our local situation, but at what's happening globally to draw on what has worked in other jurisdictions. And we see that there are strengths in other jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. And we're really bringing that in to our South African situation. So there's hope on the horizon when it comes to our whistleblowers. And we want to get to a position where our legislative framework has been strengthened with these reforms, mm-hmm. but we need to then see it play out practically, where our whistleblowers feel safe to report, whether it's within their organizations or feel safe enough to go outside the organization to designated persons to be able to report what they have. So again, I'm hopeful that in the next year, we're definitely going to see our new legislation and then that really playing out in our organizational spaces as well.
100%. If you've just joined us, we are in conversation with Tendai Jangara, Director in Dispute Practice at Cliff Dekker Hofmeyr, also known as CDH. And we've been unfolding and deliberating on and looking at some solutions as to whistleblowing in South Africa. Many South Africans fear for it because they fear that they might be risking their lives. But of course, as we know, there needs to be a balance that's between ethics and safety. Some perspective to understand the context of whistleblowing in South Africa, understand the concerns that are typically raised around diversity of whistleblowers and how legislation together with a culture shift can all contribute to ensuring that accountability is prioritized. While we are still going to speak to Tendai in just a moment, and of course getting your insight on this conversation too, we welcome your voice notes on 063-688-0959. Tendai, I'm keen to understand, perhaps, and you can indulge us here, in terms of your participation within the sphere of whistleblowing and, of course, assisting with the dispute resolution, especially where it's an individual who feels like they might be challenging a large organization, and it brings us to a quote-unquote David and Goliath scenario. Do you find that individuals, if they act alone and don't have the protection of an organization, of a body, of a senior individual within an organization, that again, they shy away from whistleblowing? And are there ways within which we need to review this and make it easier to whistleblow the whistle, essentially?
So, Google, I think you've given the right analogy of the David and Goliath, because those are the situations that we find. Again, it's public sector, private sector, where very often...
All right, seems as though we've lost Tendai there very briefly on such a pertinent point of this conversation, but we will get her back on the line. Gremlins in the system, as you would know. Oof, part of the dynamics that we have to deal with in the world of broadcasting. But much like we do, there's load shedding, there's power concerns, water concerns, and sometimes the technical gremlins unfortunately do get the better of us. But we are working on getting Tendai Jangara, a director in dispute resolution practice at Cliff Dekker Hofmeyer, joining us back on the line now. Tendai, thank you so much. Gremlins working against us, unfortunately, but appreciate your patience. You were giving us some clarity and context around, again, how it is that we can try to make sure that there isn't a behemoth of a company facing an individual who is easy for them to, you know, I guess, bully out of calling out corruption.
Absolutely. So, the first thing I think with this, to deal with a situation as a whistleblower, is to really make oneself aware of what the law is. And this is the advice I always give to persons who come and say, look, I'm aware of what's going on in my organization. First thing, understand your policies, understand who you can go to within your organization. We find that in most situations, it is a lower level person going perhaps against an executive. When it comes to that, every organization is obliged to make sure that they, one, have the mechanisms for persons to make reports, and then to ensure that such persons are protected. So when a person wants to make a report, I would say first really consider what you want to report, and then look at what mechanisms are available. Now, I don't want it to seem like the burden is then on the person who you know, wants to report. The burden really sits with the organizations to make sure that they've created the mechanisms for those reports to be made by whistleblowers, and then for investigations to take place. What we find in a lot of situations is that organizations will have whistleblowing mechanisms. So they'll advertise a hotline, they'll have an email box that people can send information to. But when it comes to seeing that process through, it's someone, very often they'll refer it internally, and that creates a culture of fear. So we need to move away from a culture, one, of fear and victimization, where employees then, or persons who report, fear coming forward and fear not having a response to what they report. So it very often is a David and versus Goliath situation, as you said, but it really, the onus is on organizations and really on the legislation to ensure that that safe passage for reporting and then seeing action following then occurs. So again, just to finalize this point and really press it, it is difficult for whistleblowers. Is created by the lack of support from the legislation that we have and the lack of procedures within organizations to ensure that when these reports are made, the persons who make them are safe.
I'm so glad that you mentioned this, Tendai, and perhaps this also allows us to get clarity and understanding on the adoption of these necessary policies by South Africans, because we've sent out this question to our listeners on Twitter and we asked them, is whistleblowing worth it? Ethics versus safety. Tendai, the results have come back. 10% of those who've responded on Twitter say no, safety comes first. 9% say yes, absolutely, prioritize ethics. And I think gives us an understanding of the culture, the mindset, and the concern and fear that South Africans do have, because we don't feel as though the processes or the support warrants the effort of blowing the whistle. Help us understand, in your view, are corporates and are the independent structures as well of whistleblowing firms or groups within civil society that are providing that comfort to people who call out corruption?
You know, I'm not surprised by the results of the survey, and, yeah. and the fear is real. The victimization, unfortunately, is real. But on the flip side, Gugu, I can say a lot of organizations, and this is state departments and private sector, are really understanding the importance of whistleblowing and not viewing whistleblowers as a nuisance or problematic people or troublesome people. There is more of an understanding that whistleblowing is really in the best interests of an organization. And I think that's probably the message that needs to come out strongly. And that message needs to be backed up by then a process which for free and victimizationless reporting, and then follow through on those reports. So we're not there yet. And I think that's really where this fear comes, because we see the bad cases. We see the cases where people have been victimized. And those are the ones, and rightly so, that are highlighted. But I think there is a concerted effort to now ensure that they actually are seen through. So those policies within organizations need to go beyond just being the pieces of paper. There needs to be action. And we are seeing, you know, a lot of people will come to us and say, okay, we've got the policy, please review it, but tell us how to make it practical. Mm. And our advice very often is make sure you have an external person, an external organization that can receive the reports and can conduct the investigations which follow from that, so that you give assurance to employees or whoever reports that there is someone else involved. It's not contained organization. I think when we look at the very unfortunate case of Ms. Deokaran, you know, it was something blown, the whistle was blown internally within the department, and unfortunately, action was taken by persons who were aware of that. Yeah. So it needs to be ventilated. It needs to go outside the space of the organizations only to external parties. We need to look at it at a national level, have a whistleblowing, almost like a department that deals with whistleblowing and ensuring that within the public sector and private sector, organizations are going beyond the lip service and going beyond just the paper policies, but actually are putting mechanisms in place for safe reporting.
100%. Tendai, it's been such a pleasure speaking to you this evening. And thank you so much for giving us some clarity and context on what otherwise can be a tricky conversation to have, but one that does need to be prioritized, as not only the safety of businesses, governance controls needs to be prioritized, but the safety and the livelihood of individuals as well. Thank you so much for your time this evening.
Thank you very much, Guguletsu. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. A real pleasure. That's Tendai Changara, a director in dispute resolution practice at Cliff Dicker Hofmeyer. Share your thoughts calling it out on whistleblowing. And of course, is it worth risking your life, balancing ethics and safety? We're happy to take your voice notes on 063-688-0959.